This is continuing impeachment coverage on the Jason Rantz Show.
Adam Schiff is currently on the Senate floor. He is the lead impeachment manager for the Democrats. He spent all day trying to make the case that the president should be removed from office. Unfortunately for his side, he's trying to make the case without any evidence of a crime. No evidence of a crime whatsoever. Lots of feelings, lots of anger, driven in large part by TDS, Trump Derangement Syndrome. But the fact of the matter is, he doesn't have what he needs to make a compelling case, not only to the American people, but more importantly, in this case, to the Senate. Now, maybe this isn't really about convincing the senators to vote alongside Democrats in removing the president. In fact, it pretty clearly is not why they're doing this. Because he's not hiding it, Adam Schiff. He's not hiding his motive. They don't want you voting for President Trump because they know you're going to reelect him.
Instead, we are here today to consider a much more grave matter. And that is an attempt to use the powers of the presidency to cheat in an election. For precisely this reason, the president's misconduct cannot be decided at the ballot box. For we cannot be assured that the vote will be fairly won. In corruptly using his office to gain a political advantage, in abusing the powers of that office in such a way to jeopardize our national security and the integrity of our elections, in obstructing the investigation into his own wrongdoing, the president has shown that he believes that he's above the law and scornful of constraint.
Above the law, and yet they don't cite the law that he broke. They say no one's above the law, but they don't actually tell you what law was broken. I know they talk about quid pro quo a lot. Wasn't actually in the articles of impeachment. Bribery, quid pro quo, that wasn't part of it. They talked about it incessantly, but they didn't actually put it in the articles of impeachment. This is all about going after the president's reelection chances. This is about putting pressure, as Senator Tim Scott said last hour, the Republican from South Carolina, this is about putting pressure on certain senators who are Republicans who are up in tough reelection bids. We're talking about Susan Collins. We're talking about people that they think are vulnerable. Now, I don't know if they're as vulnerable as Adam Schiff believes. I don't know if the American people are looking how they vote on this as a deciding factor, whether or not they're going to put back into office these individual senators. But the fact of the matter is they don't have any facts on their side. They have a lot of people who are offering opinions. And opinions are valuable, sure. But that's not enough to impeach. It shouldn't be enough to impeach. You should expect more of impeachment. Now, as the Democrats over the next 2.5 days make their case, and then, of course, the Trump team makes theirs, and then there's questions and answers for 16 hours next week. After that, there's going to be a debate about witnesses. Should witnesses be called? Now, I would argue that every single time they talk about the importance of witnesses, they make their case seem even more weak. I know there's an expectation from the American people that there be witnesses called. I get the expectation, which is partly why I believe that they will call some witnesses. But it is a weird argument to say in the House, you didn't need any of those witnesses or any of those documents, and you were willing to impeach because the evidence was overwhelming. Facts not in dispute. But in the Senate, you actually need access to that to make your case. It doesn't make sense. But the question then will become, okay, who are going to be the witnesses? The Washington Post earlier today had a story about Senate aides basically contemplating pitching an idea to their senators. It's unclear if this idea was actually pitched. It's unclear if anyone's willing to do this. But it essentially said, hey, Republicans and Democrats will come together and they will agree to a trade. We'll give you John Bolton, former National Security Advisor to the president. You give us Hunter Biden, someone who was in a position only because his father allowed him to be there, working for a corrupt company. That, by the way, is undisputed. Burisma was a corrupt company, is a corrupt company. So will that happen? Don't know. Adam Schiff today said, don't like that idea.
This isn't like some fantasy football trade, as I said yesterday. This isn't, we'll offer you this if you'll give us that. We'll offer you a witness that is irrelevant and immaterial, who has no relevant testimony, but a witness that will allow us to smear a presidential candidate if you want to get a legitimate witness. That's not a trade. Trials aren't trades for witnesses. We offered last night to have the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court rule on a question of materiality for any of the witnesses. And you know something? Not surprisingly, the president's team was vehemently opposed.
They were opposed to that because that's not the role of the Chief Justice. That's why. In fact, you made the argument today that this isn't about going to the courts. You made the argument literally today that the court shouldn't be a part of this at all. That this is about the Senate. This is about the politicians in that chamber. Now, I generally agree with his point of in trials, you don't make those kinds of trades. It's not a trial in a traditional sense. Because if it were, you've got a lot of jurors who'd be kicked off that jury in a heartbeat. Why? Because you've got Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Amy Klobuchar, Michael Bennett, all running against President Trump in 2020. You've got Kamala Harris and Cory Booker and Kirsten Gillibrand, who are former opponents of the president. Surely there's a conflict of interest there, correct? But let's talk about this line that they're starting to take on Hunter Biden. We started to hear it get put out there about a month ago or so. It's a talking point because they knew that they were going to demand witnesses be called. They knew they were going to make that pitch to the American people. And then, of course, well, then they knew Republicans would say, fine, if you want witnesses so bad, we'll call Hunter Biden. Now they're saying, and they've been saying it for a while, that he's not material. He's not relevant.
Hunter Biden is a total sideshow. As Adam Schiff pointed out last night, that focusing on Hunter Biden just furthers the entire scheme that Trump put forward. Well,
that Senator Chris Van Hollen, the Democrat from Maryland on MSNBC, he is not relevant, Hunter Biden. On the contrary, of course he's relevant. It is in the best interest of this country to make sure that people aren't tied to corruption, working in concert with an American politician. If all of a sudden they call, let's say they call Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden says, okay, I know I'm under oath. I'll be honest. Yes, I only got this job because my dad is the former vice president. And yes, we basically traded on the name to get some favors into this country, into this company that's corrupt in Ukraine. Yes, we already know that my dad was bragging about getting a prosecutor fired, a prosecutor we frankly didn't want to have to deal with in Burisma. Obviously, the president would have been correct in talking about this in the first place. We are in a better position not giving foreign aid to a country that's corrupt, and we're certainly in a better position not having a candidate who might become president in Joe Biden offering favors to his son for corrupt purposes. Now, if that turns out to be true, yes, it is true that that kind of corruption would clearly help President Trump in re-election if he was going up against Joe Biden, because it would make Joe Biden a weaker candidate. There's no doubt about it. But it would also benefit the American people to not have a candidate for president who might win have this kind of corruption tied to him. Because if it is a case of corruption, he would be a weakened president. He would be a president that others can take advantage of. That would weaken our power in this world, with our allies, with our enemies. So we all benefit from it. And if that corruption was why the president made that phone call to begin with, even if it doesn't show any corrupt or illegal intent, which it clearly does not, then boy, does that hurt the Democratic case. Maybe that's why they're fighting so hard not to have Hunter Biden testify. You're listening to the Jason Rancho special coverage as we take a deep dive into impeachment today. If you have any questions about what's going on, if you need any clarity about points that have been made, if you have any specific questions that you need answered so you're able to have conversations and debates with people on the other side of this issue, send me a text at 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770.
This is continuing impeachment coverage on the Jason Rant Show.
Your questions at 1-800-465-8770. We got a text message from the 425 in Lake Stevens saying, Jason, can you explain why they need the Democrats' permission to call Hunter Biden since they have the majority? Can't they just do it? Well, in theory, they can. The question about who's going to be called as a witness is really all about when it will be called. So yesterday we saw during the debate over the House rules, or the rules for the Senate impeachment trial being managed by the House managers, the question was whether or not they would allow for witnesses before they make their case here, as they've been doing today, or after. Now, the Republicans have said from the start, we're going to do this after, because that's what we did when we were talking about impeachment and actually went through impeachment with Clinton. They could literally say we're going to call, Republicans could exclusively say we're going to call Hunter Biden. The question is, do they have enough votes? Number one, they probably do. They'd have to lose four senators on their side, the Republicans, for that to not go through. But they can call Hunter Biden on their own. They don't need any Democrats. The question, though, is does that give off the appearance of an unfair trial if that's the only person they call? The whole idea of saying the Democrats pushing for a witness is dangerous because it opens themselves up to having to defend not calling Hunter Biden. Well, the same is true on the right. If they only call Hunter Biden, what's the argument as to not call John Bolton? It's a compelling argument, and it puts Republicans in a really tough spot. So I don't think Hunter Biden should be called unless they're giving in to some of the demands coming from the Democrats as two witnesses to call. That's the only time I think it's appropriate to call Hunter Biden. I would not simply call Hunter Biden and that's it, and then move on. And I think most of the senators understand that, even though they want to hear Hunter Biden testify. Some of them actually want to hear Joe Biden testify. Now, Ted Cruz, the senator from Texas, he was giving a press conference, about an hour and a half ago. He said the decision on calling witnesses is a decision in the first instance for the parties and for the parties' counsels. So the question on calling Hunter Biden is going to be a decision for the president's lawyers to make initially. I don't think the Senate should force the parties to call witnesses that their lawyers don't make the decision to call. So in other words, in this case, when it has to do just with Hunter Biden, Senator Cruz is saying, well, let's see what the actual legal team for President Trump wants to do. Now, it's in their interest not to call anybody because they can simply say, look, this case is so weak, senators, we don't have to call any witnesses. Adam Schiff says a law was broken, didn't include it in the articles of impeachment. Adam Schiff says there's a mountain of evidence to prove his case. We don't think so. Neither do you. But if that's their position, that they don't even need anything else because their mountain of evidence suggests the president acted unlawfully. Okay, fine. We don't agree with that. We don't think you will either. So we'll step back. We're not calling anybody. Now, a lot of this ultimately will be decided by the public. The truth of the matter is they're looking at the polls. They're looking at polls that suggest, even though it's a question that lacks context when asked, whether or not people think there should be documents subpoenaed or witnesses testifying, people overwhelmingly say yes. Now, when you tell it to them, when you just ask that question, I understand why someone might say yes. Now, if you give the nuanced argument as to why this may or may not be necessary, I think it probably changes. But most people don't think like that because most people, unlike you and I, they're not really following this. Kudos to you, by the way, for listening to all of this, reading about it, and actually following it, because you understand the importance of being knowledgeable on this topic. But most other people are not like you and me. And so they just simply say, wait, you're not calling a witness? Really? That seems weird. Why wouldn't you want to call a witness if you're innocent? And so they're going to give in. Let's see what they end up doing. We got a text message in. Another one, this one coming from the 425 again. Realize the Republicans can exonerate the president of this impeachment without calling witnesses, and then the Senate can open a separate investigation into the Burisma corruption case and call Hunter Biden as a witness in that. That's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. I'd prefer something like that to be done in the House. But unfortunately, the Republicans don't have the votes in the House. Is this something that the Senate's going to pick up? I think it's a slightly more difficult case to be made, so far removed from the so-called corruption. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to send me a text message, if you have any questions about what's going on. What's been interesting is listening to the media coverage and how the analysts, so far at least, responded to Adam Schiff's case earlier today. He spent 2.5 hours making his opening statement. He said nothing new. But if you're Jeffrey Toobin, the CNN legal analyst, oh my God, he was drooling. He was so impressed.
I thought it was dazzling. Oh, I thought the dazzling way he wove through both the facts of the case and the historical context was really remarkable.
It was remarkable and dazzling. Let's see if he can say anything else. What other adjectives? Let's start off.
Was the second best. Courtroom address, since it's like a courtroom, that I ever heard after
the OJ case. If you, the gloves don't fit, you must acquit. Are we doing that?
A prosecutor named Jonathan Benedict in the Michael Skakel case in Connecticut was the best I ever heard.
Okay, Jeffrey. He was so impressed. Take that with Fox News' Greg Gutfeld, who I think had the best reaction I've heard all day to Adam Schiff's performance so far.
Are these people trying to kill America? Adam Schiff, doesn't he not realize that speaking for any longer than 10 minutes is like a slow gas leak? If you're listening to this impeachment and you haven't opened your windows, you're probably dead right now. They were trying to wear us down with incessant babble. And Trump is right. These are all opinions. This can't be a trial if it's all opinions, because they're basically just saying, they're mind reading. It's a historical impeachment in that it's become something so trivial that now anyone can do it, right?
And I think that's a really interesting point and an important one at that. They've turned this truly into an impeachment by political anger. Adam Schiff and other Democrats, they are upset that the president won election to begin with. They're upset. We talked about it a little bit earlier on in the show. Donald Trump was not supposed to be president. He was not supposed to be president. He's an outsider. He's this reality TV show host. He's a braggart. He's just some businessman. He wasn't supposed to be president. And when he became president, when he defeated Hillary Clinton, who was supposed to be president, they lost it. And this is their payback. This is 100% their payback. 1-800-465-8770. We're getting some questions about impeachment, which we're going to answer when we come back. Plus, we're going to talk with Josh Hammer. He is the editor at large for the Daily Wire. He's also a lawyer. He knows exactly what it is he's talking about. We'll get his legal take on everything that happened today with impeachment when we come back. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show.
You're listening to continuing impeachment coverage on AM 770 KTTH.
Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show live on this Wednesday evening. The impeachment hearing is continuing with Representative Adam Schiff, the House impeachment manager, the lead, making the case that the president broke the law. Except they have no evidence of any laws being broken, and they didn't even include any of those laws broken in the articles of impeachment. Joining me on the line to react to the day's legal arguments is the editor-at-large of the Daily Wire. He's of counsel for the First Liberty organization. Josh Hammer, welcome back to the show.
How you doing tonight, Jason? Good to talk with you.
I'm doing well. I'm mostly moved by all of the glowing CNN coverage of Adam Schiff today with Jeffrey Toobin saying he was dazzling. What's your take so far, day one, of Adam Schiff's performance?
So, you know, as our mutual friend and my boss, the Daily Wire, Ben Shapiro, likes to say, two things can be true at once. On the one hand, it's true that Adam Schiff has upped his game from the horrific embarrassment that was the House's rushed impeachment process. He definitely has upped his game. And you know what? Adam Schiff is actually very talented at telling a narrative. He's exceptionally good at lying. I could actually see him being a good poker player. He probably could just bluff his butt off and just win a lot of chips. But the problem is that their case, as you point out, substantively, is just terrible. So even if Schiff has upped his game, and even if he is good at getting up there in front of the camera of the C-SPAN audience, the national TV, and telling and weaving his narrative, it's a fallacious narrative. They don't have a single shred of evidence to back up what are genuinely farcical impeachment charges. You know, they publicly floated quid pro quo that didn't poll test well. Then they were floating bribery. They realized they didn't have the gravitas to make that claim. And they ended up on abuse of power, which is completely vague and doesn't even mean anything, and obstruction of Congress, which is antithetical to the entire constitutional separation of powers framework. So there is some serious potential for negative precedents here. They are really setting a dangerous precedent for future Congresses, kind of impeaching willy-nilly. But Adam Schiff, he upped his game, but it's still not a particularly impressive performance, I would say.
It's not, and a big part of his performance is saying things as facts and then pretending that they're facts. There's one clip I want you to listen to. It's only 30 seconds long, and I'll get your reaction.
They can't contest the facts. The president was the key player in the scheme. Everyone was in the loop. He directed the actions of his team. He personally asked a foreign government to investigate his opponent. These facts are not in dispute. Ultimately, the question for you is whether the president's undisputed actions require the removal of the 45th president of the United States from office.
So it's so weird that the facts are not in dispute. Why is the legal team for Trump even there?
So, you know, I kind of agree with him that the facts are not in dispute. The facts are on a 5-page White House transcript that everyone in America by now has read. I mean, Jason, you and I do this for a living. I feel like I've read that transcript 25 times just to try and pour it over with a magnifying glass to see if I, like, try to read between the lines with some invisible ink to see if I'm missing something. And I don't think I'm missing something. I have to be honest with you. Now, was this the cleanest phone call in the history of phone calls? No, of course not. And I've been pretty open in saying that. Does it constitute an impeachable offense? Of course not. You know, at the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia in 1787, the framers actually expressly deliberated whether they should make what they called maladministration an impeachment criterion. Maladministration basically just means that you're doing a bad job. We disagree with the policies you're implementing and the way you're leading the country. But James Madison and the other framers actually rejected that charge. They thought it would be too easy to impeach a president. So they put in this English common law phrase, high crimes and misdemeanors, which is understood as a fundamental breach of the public trust. It's a pretty high threshold. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason why Bill Clinton, of course, committed perjury. Richard Nixon had Watergate. These are real acts that have been violated. And what has the president done, Jason? I just don't understand it. It is a serious, serious abuse of power by the Democrats to launch his impeachment brigade on these flimsy charges, I think.
Just joining us, we're talking with Josh Hammer. He's the editor-at-large of the Daily Wire. He's also of counsel for the First Liberty Institute. It is kind of interesting here. We got a question from someone. It's a legal question regarding a procedure yesterday, and I want to pose it to you. They asked, why did the president's defense team not object to the House managers introducing new evidence that was not in the record through this back door when they were arguing some of the Schumer amendments yesterday? And I saw some folks asking the same thing on CNN and Fox News and wondering if maybe they were not quick enough to try to dispute some of it. But it all has to do with how this is supposed to run in this setting, correct?
It's a good question. My best guess as to why they decide on that particular procedural route was as a concession to Senate Republican moderates. That would be my best guess. Because remember here, you know, we're both in kind of right-leaning media, but not everyone in the U.S. Senate is, you know, listening to Jason Rantz or reading Josh Hammer or Ben Shapiro or whatever.
I think most of them are, though, Josh.
Sorry?
I think most of them are actually reading and listening to both of us. Let's put that out there.
Well, you know, I hope so. But, you know, Mitch McConnell, he needs to keep all his ducks in a line, right? He needs to be appealing to the Ted Cruz's and Josh Hawley's of the world, just as he's appealing to the Susan Collins's and Lisa Murkowski's of the world. So my best guess as to that particular question, and it's a very good question, is that it's a pure concession to try and keep his ducks in a line and not lose anyone, because there are going to be some more difficult votes coming up as this thing drags forward.
Should there be witnesses?
You know, look, I don't think it would be the end of the world. In an ideal world, of course, the House and the Senate would be passing legislation. They would be doing the things that they are actually elected to do. The reality is that Democrats control the House, Republicans control the Senate. There's really nothing of consequence that's ever going to get passed, especially in an election year. So I actually think a drawn-out process could be electorally beneficial for President Trump. I mean, I think getting Hunter Biden up there could actually really help Republicans come November. So I'm actually not as opposed to calling witnesses as some other folks are on the right. I certainly do not think that John Bolton would be a smoking gun that some Democrats think he would. I mean, what is the worst possible thing that John Bolton can say? There's really only one thing that Bolton could possibly say, in my opinion, that could give the Democrats mm-hmm. what they want, which is Bolton could say, I had a conversation with President Donald Trump, and he told me that he was withholding aid to try and get the Ukrainians to get Hunter and Joe Biden. But that conversation just didn't happen, Jason. Like, the president may be sometimes a little clumsy, but he's not stupid. Like, there's no way he would ever have that. So I'm not that afraid of John Bolton testifying, and as a matter of election year strategy, I don't think it would be that disastrous for witnesses to be called, honestly.
I agree with you, and I think there's some missing context to all of this. Bolton is a war hawk conservative, right? This is a guy who is very far to the right, and he is not afraid of taking positions that are very hawkish. So I don't know if people think that he's going to go up there and start to just attack the president when he's got a book coming out in just a few weeks. The intent, of course, of saying, I would love to testify, is that he knows that they're going to assert executive privilege. So he's just going to use it to sell books. But his audience is conservative. So I don't think he's going to go up there if he does. If they reject executive privilege, they waive it and have him testify. He's not going to go after he might go after Giuliani. But he's not going after Trump because he's trying to sell books to the Trump crowd.
It's a really good point. I mean, the only alternative route for John Bolton to go is to go full, like, Jennifer Rubin, you know, Evan McMullen, Max Boot. But that's not who John Bolton is.
Exactly.
John Bolton, he's been a conservative his whole life. I mean, like, back when he was a Yale undergraduate, he was a member of the Party of the Right, which is, like, the most right-wing party of the, like, Yale Political Union undergraduate organization they have there. So, I mean, he's, like, a lifelong kind of Bill Buckley, National Review, Ronald Reagan movement conservative. So I agree with you. I don't see it happening. What I see John Bolton saying, if you were to testify, is to say that he disagreed with Trump's withholding of aid on policy grounds, and he almost assuredly very strongly disapproved of the role that Rudy Giuliani played. But he's not going to have any kind of smoking gun that's going to totally alien him from Trump's base. There's just no way.
So 1 minute left. What would you do if you are on the Trump legal team?
Well, something that I've been saying, there are really two lines of argumentation that I've, like, written columns on that I wish I heard Trump's legal team advancing more. The first is to just make the substantive argument that I kind of was getting at earlier, which is the framers of the Constitutional Convention rejected this lower maladministration standard, and they put in this higher high crimes misdemeanor standard. And I would just encourage them to advance the historical argument that tried to impeach on these grounds is just so unprecedented from that perspective. And the second line of argumentation, that I wrote a column on this back in November, let's understand what the president did. He was acting well within his constitutional authority. He was conducting foreign policy with regards to foreign aid. That is squarely within his Article II constitutional authority. And there's actually a strand, or a stream, I should say, of court rulings holding that when you engage in something akin to a quid pro quo in the context of exercising your lawful constitutional authority, that itself is free speech. So the Democrats are essentially arguing that what amounts to constitutionally protected free speech amounts to an impeachable offense. That's a very, very, very difficult argument to make, I think.
We've been talking with Josh Hammer. Check out his work at dailywire.com. He's the editor at large there. Josh, my friend, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it. I'm sure we'll have more interviews in the coming days as we analyze this impeachment sham. Thank you so much for stopping by live tonight. I really appreciate it.
You got it, Jason. Anytime.
You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. When we come back, there's some breaking news out of Seattle as we take a brief break from coverage of impeachment. Police are investigating a shooting of multiple individuals in and around Belltown. The investigation is ongoing. It happened at 4th Avenue and Pine. There are apparently multiple victims, and officers are searching the area for a suspect, but no description has yet been provided. We will have an update on that when we come back.
Breaking news on AM 770 KTTH.
Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. We have some breaking news taking our attention away from the impeachment hearing. Police in Seattle are investigating a shooting near 4th Avenue and Pine where they say there are multiple victims. Officers right now are searching the area for a suspect, though we have no description that's been provided by the SPD. And at the same time, there was an earlier shooting. So two shootings within almost blocks of each other. It's causing total traffic chaos right now on 3rd and 4th Avenue. So let's go through the two of these. One shooting occurred a little bit after 5 o'clock tonight near the McDonald's at 4th and Pine. Police are now saying there are multiple people shot. The reporter Michael Spears over at Cairo 7 TV has a series of notes online right now that says he sees one man on the sidewalk with a bullet in his leg outside of the Macy's and says officers are speaking to another person down on the ground inside Victrola, which is a coffee shop within the Macy's building. The suspect fled. The motive is unclear, though there was a shooting just yesterday at Westlake Center, which is very close to this location, that is believed to be gang-related. We're not 100% certain of that, but I do know that the gang unit was actually part of the investigation. So that's one shooting. Now, about 3 o'clock this afternoon, police were attempting to arrest a man in Belltown for some kind of drug offense. He ends up pulling a gun. Officers shoot him. When you pull a gun, you're going to get shot by cops, and that's okay with me. I would rather you go down rather than that cop. Now, in that case, he's expected to survive. So the shooting near 4th and Pine, again, if you're just joining us, has multiple victims. The suspect has fled. Officers and medics are providing first aid to the injured. We don't believe there are any deceased at this point, so that's good news. But it is still early. If you have to drive in that area, which actually, I had to later today. I'm canceling that plan. If you don't have to be in this area, you should probably not go. Several roads are completely closed off. That includes Lenora, 2nd Avenue, Bell Street, 3rd Avenue, and Pine. Now, this is a part of downtown Seattle / Belltown that's already always congested around this time. So just imagine how bad it is right now that there's such a large police and medical presence there. Looking at some of the photos of some of the chaos now at Abercrombie and Fitch. So this general area is already going to be dealing with some significant traffic. And now that they're closing down, it doesn't just mean that those streets that are closed down are going to be directly impacted. All the streets surrounding it will also be directly impacted. Of course, there's an entrance, an on-ramp to I-5 at that point, I-5 South. So if you're expected to need to drive into that area, maybe you're going home from work, maybe you're returning, maybe you're going to a movie, know that there's total gridlock right now in the area. If you're just joining us, again, police are investigating a shooting near 4th Avenue and Pine where they say there are multiple victims. Michael Spears, reporter over at Cairo 7 TV, was actually on air around 5 o'clock with a live shot about the shooting in Belltown when he then heard the sound of gunfire. He says he can see medics, and this was sent out about 5:20, so not too long ago. He said at that time he could see medics working on two people outside of McDonald's, one man on the sidewalk with a bullet to his leg outside of Macy's, and officers are speaking to another person down on the ground inside Victrola, inside the Macy's building. So we don't have a lot of details beyond that. Again, the SPD has posted some details about this. They're saying that the investigation is ongoing. They're confirming that there are multiple victims, and they're confirming that the suspect, meaning one person, as far as we can tell, has fled and police are searching for him. They're saying officers and medics are providing first aid to the injured, and they will give us an update when they have it. The shooting involved, they say, Seattle PD and the King County Sheriff's Department. The suspect in the earlier shooting had been transported to Harborview Medical Center for treatment for non-life-threatening issues. So, again, two shooting. One is considered active as they're still trying to figure out who the shooter is and where he went. An earlier shooting has been taken care of. You know, this is happening at a time where there was shooting just yesterday, and this is part of the issue that we've been talking about on the show for so long. If this is, in fact, a gang-related shooting, what exactly is the city of Seattle going to do about it? Because you have some council members who refuse to even use the term gang member because they don't want to offend a potential gang member. So what's being done if we can't actually identify the problem, if, in fact, that's what this is? And my suspicion is, if it's not a gang-related shooting, which makes sense in the context of one being suspected yesterday, then this is just another sort of part of drug deals gone wrong. Whether or not it has anything to do with a gang, it probably or might have something to do with a drug crime. And that goes specifically to the fact that the city is refusing to enforce drug laws. They refuse to enforce it. We do know in this case, one of the shootings earlier was drug-related. Again, we don't know all the details yet, but they say it's drug-related. In the city, you're not allowed to arrest drug dealers because you've decided to change how we enforce the law in the courts. Whether it's King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg or Pete Holmes, Seattle City Attorney, they're not actually punishing these people. They don't believe in putting folks in jail. And so they change their policy, so if you're found with X amount of any illicit substance on you, if it's a so-called personal use amount, they're not actually going to charge you. Well, guess what? Drug dealers, they learn about that and they carry less on them. And then things like this might happen. Stick with MyNorthwest.com, our sister website. As they get more details, they'll report it for you. MyNorthwest.com. You've been listening to The Jason Rancho. Thank you so much for tuning in.